It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
Kids are legends to go.
Happy New Year and welcome to Still Potable. That is Brian B. Rob Rob from MassLive.com. That is Jay King from The Athletic. And I am Sam Jam Packard. And we are so happy to have you join us here on CLNS YouTube. Thanks to everyone who's subscribed to that. This podcast is brought to you by FanDuel. It's America's number one sports book and the exclusive wagering partner of CLNS Media. Thanks to everyone who subscribes to us. Still Potable, the best Monday through Friday Boston Celtics podcast. You can find all of our work on patreon.com/stillpotable. We are ringing in the new year. And what we like to do here on the free episode is a little thing called the Potable Six Pack. But Jay King, being a content genius himself, normally the six pack is looking back, recounting the six best things that just happened. But no, we are prognosticating forward. We are looking forward today, gentlemen, because Jay King had the bright idea. Let's draft the six most important things for the Boston Celtics in 2024. And he's kind of scrambled my brains there. I wasn't really prepared for this, but we're going
to
do it.
To be fair, I wasn't prepared for this either. I came up with that idea like when I hopped on this stream. So this will be three gentlemen drafting with no preparation, but our life is preparation for this. Our whole life is preparation. We live our lives around the Celtics. So I'm going to draft some amazing things.
I think that's fair. I have won the Potable Six Pack the past seven times. And so I get to decide the draft order.
How hungover are you today, Packard?
You can tell already. It's kind of a struggle for me to speak in four sentences. So I would say mildly. Because of that, I'm going
to
allow...
Did you do anything fun for New Year's?
I went out to a New Year's Eve party, got dressed up in a suit, was looking good.
You dressed up in a suit?
Yeah, it was a fancy New Year's Eve party.
I've never understood people who get dressed up to...
Well, party. Jay, you wear sweatpants at all occasions. That is your party. I'm shocked you wore a suit.
Why would you and your friends want to dress up? Why do you want to wear a suit? Why do people want to wear uncomfortable stuff when you could just wear sweatpants?
It wasn't my idea, but the people throwing the party were like, wear a suit. And I said, I'll wear a suit. And so I wore a suit. And I'm like, you know what? Sometimes it feels good to wear a suit and look good, Jay. It's something I know you probably wouldn't have a lot of experience with, but
looking good or wearing a suit. Yeah. Neither one of those is it was my strong suit.
Ooh, well done there.
Well played.
All right. The order is B Rob, you'll go first, then Jay, then I will go, and then we'll bring that back around for the second round of the Potable Six Pack. So again, just to remind everyone, patreon.com/stillpotable, go subscribe today. And then we're drafting moving forward, the six most important things for the Celtics in the year 2024. So if you really want to like take this into the start of next season, you can. Other than that, there are no rules. B-Rup, you're up.
Ooh, a lot of pressure here from the number one pick. This might be a little obvious, but I still have to go with it just based on how he's looked lately. Just Porzingis' health. This is right now, like, the Celtics turning from what was a really good team last year to a potentially dominant, maybe unstoppable on both ends of the floor type team this season that we've seen through 30-plus games here. And Porzingis has been front and center for all that. And particularly on the offensive end, Jay and I got into it a little bit last night, which is talking about his post-up situation, how efficient he's been on that front. And so right now, like, he is the answer they've had in the playoffs with, on paper, that they haven't had the last couple seasons, of where he can just punish the switching, any type of mismatch he gets, no matter what type of shot he's taking, no matter, you know, with pretty much anywhere within 15 feet of the hoop. So if his legs, arms, whatever, feet, any part of his body, he's had an assortment of injuries throughout his career. They've managed him quite well this year. But if they can get him to the finish line right now in one piece, by controlling his minutes, by strategically giving him nights off, by just giving him straight up rest, probably at points of the year, if they, you know, build up enough of a lead for the top seed in the Eastern Conference, that's going to take a long time for that to happen, I think, based on how well the Bucks are playing. But Porzingis' health is number one on the list for me.
This could be just some recency bias, but it feels like the Celtics are learning more and more, like, just how great he is in the post and trusting him in the post more and more. Like, he doesn't need a bad defender on him. It's just anybody who's not a huge center is just a total mismatch for him. He has no problem scoring over the top of just about any other type of player. And he's actually not great at posting up centers, or they normally don't even try using him to post up centers. But anyone else, it's just like, he gets the ball, he faces up, and he just shoots over the top, or he gets the ball, he posts up, spins into you, draws contact, creates a foul, still can make it with contact. He's been utterly ridiculous in the post this year, and it's a totally new element for a team that last year had two non-scorers at that spot in Al Horford and Robert Williams. So I think that's a huge, huge piece for them in the playoffs. And yeah, like, keeping him on the court is as important as just about anything else.
What do you guys think is the best player, just to, like, if you're going to pick anyone to guard him right now in the league, like, who's the best matchup to guard? Because it's like you said, Jay, he doesn't post up centers, but then it's like, he goes, takes threes. So if you have the bulk to protect him down low, then he can just pull you out to beyond the arc and then, you know, shoot him, you off the floor. So it's tough to find anyone who can just handle a skill set like from on both ends.
Was it the guy they played yesterday? Is it Wemby? Is he the person?
I mean, in theory,
to guard anyone.
Well, not last night though.
I would say the thing that makes it even tougher is you also have to deal with Jason Tatum and Derek White and right. Drew Holiday and Jaylen Brown. So it's like, if it were just Porzingis you were worried about, you could try some different coverages. But because of everything else you have to deal with, like, a lot of the time Porzingis is left open at the arc, or a lot of the time they have to switch to try to take away Tatum. And then it's like, oh, okay, Porzingis has a wing on him, dog food, you know? And who would be? I feel like a big power forward, like a big mobile power, like Draymond.
Yeah.
Is Draymond big enough? Probably. But yeah, that would be like the toughest matchup for me, probably. Something like that. Maybe Bam.
Yeah, Bam is the other guy who came to my mind.
Bam kind of killed him when they played earlier in the season. And Porzingis still had a great game offensively, but defensively he had some troubles with Bam.
Yeah, those, like, finding guys like that who can punish him, not play Porzingis off the floor, but make his life hard on that. And I think like Bam, you said, like, I think that is going to be the key as far as once we get into the playoffs for opponents trying to, you know, weaken up the Celtics in some area. Because, you know, right now, no one's really going at Porzingis and taking advantage of him on the defensive end, and then he turns the tables on the other end of the floor.
Indeed.
All right. Before Jay's second pick, we're going to hear from our friends at FanDuel.
All right, let's take a break here to hear from our sponsor, FanDuel. Score early this NFL season with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets with any winning $5 moneyline bet. That's $150 if your team wins. So if you've been thinking about joining FanDuel, there's no better time to get in on the action. The app is easy to use. There's a wide range of betting options. You can do spreads, player props, over-unders, and much more. So visit FanDuel.com/Boston and kick off the NFL season. FanDuel, the official partner of the NFL. Massachusetts 21 and present. Hope it's here. First online real money wager only. $5 pregame moneyline wager required. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com, gambling helpline ma.org, or call 1-800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234. And now back to the show.
Welcome back to Still Potable. Subscribe today, patreon.com/stillpotable. We are on pick two of the Potable six-pack of the six most important things for the Celtics in 2024. The kid is up. Jay King, what's your pick?
Late game poise. Stay composed. Stay together. Avoid ISO bullshit. And that's, I mean, at the end of the day, what's killed the Celtics the past two seasons deep in the playoffs is they haven't been able to solve great defenses. And they haven't been able to solve great defenses in fourth quarters, second halves, and they've had droughts against first the Warriors in the finals and then last year the Heat in the Eastern Conference Finals. So just keep your cool. This team, I think they're a smarter team now. I think Jaylen Brown has developed. I think adding Jrue Holiday is a significant piece. I think Derek White's emergence and the fact that he's playing all the time in crunch time is really important for the Celtics. I think Porzingis gives them solutions that they didn't have in the past. And so I don't think it's fair to put the failures of the past onto this current group. But at the same time, they have to prove that against the best of the best, they can avoid the stagnation and avoid the isolation and keep playing together. The Achilles heel of this team has been like in big moments, sometimes they just players just go their own ways. And I don't think it's a selfish thing. I think it's more like a just trying to win thing. But like at some point you've got to graduate beyond that and play together all the time and continue to figure out solutions in crunch time. And I think, you know, if they can do that, then they probably have more ways to beat you than any other team in the league. But it still comes down to, at the end of the day, can you out-execute somebody? And they haven't been able to do that against the best executing teams the past couple of seasons.
They've gotten a lot better at it, I would say, this year. They haven't, like, I know the crunch time stats or the clutch stats are not always the most accurate. I'm like, do either of you guys know what their rating is in those situations? Cause it feels like they haven't had a lot of those games, but when they had like have been in them, they've had a lot of overtime losses, which is not, you know, the best, but they've, you know, only six losses this entire season. So, not a lot to draw on there, but, just thinking recently, there haven't been that many close games, I guess, but what was it? Friday night against the Raptors, we saw Derek White come and perform extremely well in the clutch. Although that ridiculous 3-point shot he made, I wouldn't say it was the product of the best offense or the best process there. But it went in, so that made things better. But yeah, I think they're. It feels like they're doing better process, but I don't feel like they've had like a lot of opportunities for like late game execution.
Yeah, and on the whole, I think if you look at their crunch time numbers are still good in comparison to the league, but there are still the, you know, the blips that we've seen, whether it was the loss to the Hornets or the loss to Wolves. Like I said, there haven't been many losses, but when they have lost, it's usually been like they've had opportunities to win those games and the process offensively has been questionable at times. even the Warriors game, the Warriors lost, like Tatum's, you know, pull up isolation three at the end of that game. So yeah, when they clearly have, I think the most important thing with that front is being like, you have more weapons now to utilize. And I think a lot of it's going to be on Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown to be like, recognize, hey, I don't have to go one-on-one here. Like moving the ball in this situation, calling someone over for a screen, getting something going to the hoop, and then moving the ball around so someone gets an open look, because we have four or five good options to take those shots now at crunch time. Whereas in past years, that may not have been always been the case with the personnel on the floor. So, but I'm with Jay Hunter. Like, this is a monster storyline and something to look at in the second half of this regular season as well, to see how much growth they show in this area.
And I agree with you. Like, part of it is on Tatum and Brown, because I don't think those guys every night will be the answers.
Sure.
Like the Pistons game, and obviously the Pistons should not be like how we're evaluating how they're going to play against the best teams. But that game, it was very clear, like, Kristaps Porzingis is the way to go. Like, run the offense through Porzingis, get him in the post, just let him cook. And it takes a lot for a guy like Tatum, who normally has the ball in his hands, to just realize, like, tonight's not going to be my night because someone else has a better chance of scoring. And that's the type of unselfishness this team needs to have. It's probably going to be harder in the playoffs, I would say, because, like, that's when legends are made. That's when everyone's watching. And to willingly submit to being a decoy so that Porzingis can go to work, or Derek White can go to work, or whoever has the right matchup can go to work, like, that takes real unselfishness. And I think this team has that. I think this team has been very good at that so far. But it's one thing to do it in December, and it's another thing to do it when you're down 2-1 in a playoff series, and you need to trust that what Joe Mazzulla is calling is right, and that somebody else can deliver for you.
So I'm going to steal, not steal, but I'm going to take Jay King's pick and make it better. Because instead of just focusing on...
What is Happy this? New Year. Happy New Year.
Instead of just focusing on the final moments of the game, my pick, and for like I think what's the most important thing for the Celtics in 2024, is just like fully adopting the Brad Stevens, Joe Mazzulla growth mindset and become alpha Kaizen warriors, where they're getting better every single day. And it doesn't just need to happen in the final 4 minutes of a game. It needs to happen for the entire process, for the entire rest of the regular season. And I feel like this is Joe Mazzulla year two. We've done a lot of talking about him, like, finally being able to be more comfortable and kind of implementing his system, and the team being much more focused on just like the process of getting better this year, whereas opposed to last year, it's just like all about getting back to the finals. And I think they just need to be able to lock in and focus on that process of getting better for the rest of this regular season, because we saw them have an amazing start to the season last year and maybe get a little bit complacent in the months of January and February. And maybe that's where the bad habits kind of leaked into the team last year. But I think if they can focus on still getting better and still kind of developing those good habits and like engaging in the process of becoming a better team in the months of January, February, and March, when they get to April, when they get to the playoffs, they'll be in a better position. So I think it's just kind of the mental approach this team has, especially over these next 3 months, will be super important just in terms of how successful they will be in the playoffs, because they've already demonstrated they are the best team in basketball right now. Can they maintain focus and not let complacency creep in and still maintain that dominance? I think it's like what we see championship teams do is that they're kind of dominant throughout the entire year. And so whether or not they can build on that and continue focusing on the process, not just the result, I think will go huge in determining whether or not they ultimately get Banner 18.
Yeah, it's like, if can they show, I think, shades of the 07-08 Celtics, or even the first couple of years there before KG got hurt. Like, that was a team that was on a mission, that didn't mess around, that kicked the crap out of teams, you know, on a weekly basis, and that lasted all the way to the finish line, where they ran away with it, as far as the number one seed. And this team's going to have a lot more competition on that front. Like they're going to have teams on their heels. So the motivation will be there to win. But like you said, I think the process is key here because last year's team did plateau or honestly take a step back for much of the second half of the year. And this team is better and they should be able to learn from that process and be like, okay, we're winning, but how are we winning? And like, what, like, how are we going through the right process here? Are we winning in different ways every night? Are we varying in things? So if we don't have a good shooting night or if we don't have it defensively this night, we can find other ways to figure it out. And last year's team didn't have that. And this year's team through 30 games so far, so good. But like you said, it's a long way to go right now.
And sometimes you got to buy into the nonsense, like Joe Mazzulla saying the Pistons game is going to be the hardest game of the year. And like, you just got to talk yourself into that. All right, we'll figure out a way to win after falling down by 20.
To me, this team has shown so far that it has the right mentality about all that stuff. Like, they've only lost two games in a row once. Every other time they've bounced back. They've, like, that Pistons game, as much as you can laugh at it, that was a good example of like they just did not have it that night. They were terrible and found a way to steady themselves and get back to being themselves and had enough pride to not lose that game. And it just feels like this team has a nastiness that last year's team never developed. And like they hit hard. They play hard. They want to crush teams. And I just feel like this team has, this is the best team I've ever covered. And I don't think it's even close so far. And there's still time, like you said, for bad habits to creep in. But I think from the amount of options they have offensively to the added layer of rim protection that they have and size that they have with Porzingis, it's just a very complete team. And I think part of that is adding some attitude. And honestly, like, it should not be a problem for this team to focus over the next 52 games. It should not be, because they've won nothing. I guess it's not 52, whatever it is. They've won nothing. They've fallen short every year. Like, you should not be complacent. You should not be lackadaisical. You should be hell-bent on getting better and better so that you're peaking in the playoffs instead of peaking early in the season like you did last season. They played their best basketball during their start last season, and I think there were a lot of reasons for that. I think, you know, they never quite learned how to incorporate Robert Williams once he came back. They had a lot of stuff going on last year, but like they should be focused and they should have plenty of motivation to get better and better the rest of the season.
They should. I think the concern is it's just like human nature at some point checks in, and it's like the middle of January and you randomly have to go to Toronto to play a team that is terrible. And like, do they have the focus to lock
quickly? Quickly's going to help them.
No.
Yeah, he is. Yes, he is.
Good debate. Why do you think Quickly's good as a six man? Quickly is, I don't think, can sustain be playing 35 minutes a game. He's going to get exposed.
Why? Dennis Schroeder was their point guard. You do not think Quickly is a major upgrade?
I mean, you're right. When you're right, you're right. And he's much better.
World champion Dennis Schroeder.
Yeah, they should have traded Dennis Schroeder if they really wanted things to take off. That's how things generally work. Once you trade Dennis Schroeder, your team gets a lot better.
They have time. But we'll see if anyone wants him at $12 million.
We'll see. All right. Before my next pick, we're going to hear from the fine folks at Factor. Get started on your resolutions with Factor so you're ready for the new year. Factor's ready-to-eat meal delivery takes the stress out of meal planning and sets you up for success in the new year. Skip the grocery stores, prep work, and cooking fatigue. Instead, get chef-crafted, dietitian-approved meals delivered right to your door with over 35 meals to choose from per week, including options like keto, calorie smart, vegan plus veggie, and more. Plus, over 55 weekly add-ons. You'll have a ton of nutritious and flavorful options to kickstart your New Year resolutions. Factor is amazing because you do not have to go to the grocery store. You do not have to do any of that meal planning, something I'm terrible at. They just have the meals ready for you, delivered to you at your door, and you no longer have to just spend so much money on takeout. Factor is cheaper than takeout and much better tasting food. So if you just want that occasional meal or if you want to plan your entire week, you can go to Factor. Factormeals.com/winning50 and use code winning50 to get 50% off. That's code winning50 at factormeals.com/winning50 to get 50% off. It's an absolute steal. That is factormeals.com/winning50 with promo code winning50 and you get 50% off. And we're back with Still Potable. Go to patreon.com/stillpotable to subscribe today. The best Monday through Friday Celtics podcast in the world. We are only going to be taking off farther in 2024. All right. My pick for the second round of the Potable Six Pack for the six most important things for the Celtics in the next year. I'm going to go with Jaylen Brown playmaking. If he can continue to just make the right read and just be able to have the offense not take this huge dive when Jason Tatum's on the bench, I think it's going to be super important for the Celtics. It's like having Jaylen Brown, he doesn't need to be, I don't think, even as good as he's been so far, but he just needs to be like a competent playmaker and the ball could be in his hands and you kind of trust him to make the right decision. I don't think he's like going to be the even the second option. I think Derek White's like you're kind of – you put the ball in Derek White's hands generally if it's not in Jason Tatum's hands. But I think just Jaylen Brown, development as a playmaker, just makes this team that much more dynamic. He's going to be, I think, your second-best scorer. If he's just a positive on the playmaking end, not turning the ball over and making the right reads, I think there's just – it becomes that much more impossible to stop this Boston Celtics offense.
Yeah, and he can put so, put so much pressure on the rim that teams have to collapse when he's driving. And if he's making the right decisions, it really can open up things for them. And I think in the San Antonio game, like you could tell he just wanted to get out on the break. And he's always been good on the break, but probably not as good as he could be because sometimes he'd put his shoulder down and put his head down and just do something stupid. And that's happening less and less. He was going out and trying to run in transition and then getting into the paint, making the right read. The ball was moving on the other side of the court. And that really opens things up. When he can attack early and get the ball movement and get other guys operating against closeouts, like, That really opens up the offense for everybody. So, yeah, I'm with you. Jaylen's development has been kind of eye-opening this year, and it's funny because a lot of his stats are down. Like, if you look at it, probably if you weren't paying close attention every night, you'd be like, what are these idiots talking about? Jaylen Brown playing better than he did last year. It's like, no, like, pretty clearly he's playing better basketball than he did a season ago. And it's because of the defense. He's locked in, more focused every possession, and it's because he's using his ability to drive and to score to set up other people and really doing a much better job of that. So this is the continuation of this. How high can he take it? I don't know, but it's really important for the Celtics that he does that.
Yeah, looking at his just month of December, for instance, it's hard to think of just months in their careers and a snapshot where you're like, Jaylen Brown was a better player, all-around player than Jason Tatum this month. But I think unequivocally, I'd say like that was the case in December. Like Brown was phenomenal across the board on both ends of the floor, I feel like. And for him to take that type of a leap, knowing that he can already be an all-star, but now it's like, no, I can be the all-star and also be the best player on a team like night in and night out when I also have another all-star next to me. Like that is a huge leap for this team. It's why the front office, you know, bit the bullet and gave him that Supermax because they saw that potential in him. And going forward, it is. He's like, if he can just build on what he's done here the last 5-6 weeks, it's, you know, the sky's the limit for him. And going off of what you said, Jay, getting one of Bogart, I said, like, what is the ideal for him? You know, he wants to get out and run. Like, what's the ideal lineup around Jaylen Brown with this team for to get out and run? Like, because there's a lot of offensive talent on this team, but like some of the guys, like they're bottom five in the league in pace still right now. So they generally play slower than the league, but clearly Jaylen in transition is a monster. So it's like workshopping that, like what is the best group around him for him to be able to do that?
It's funny sometimes because he's almost like the only one running sometimes.
Right.
Tatum is not a runner. Tatum is not a running guy. Yeah.
No.
Tatum plays slow. Drew plays slow sometimes. Like Marcus Smart, he used to get out in transition. He used to hit Jaylen with like the backdoor bounce passes a lot. But Porzingis too, like he's not going to be beating you in transition too much. Although if you do play fast, he can be a trailer and operate that way. Or he can get out and take advantage of a cross match in transition and get an early post up. But yeah, sometimes it's just like Jaylen doing his own thing while everyone else operates at a different pace. And it can create a weird dynamic, but I think it also works. And like realistically, once the playoffs come, you play slower anyway. You're not going to be living in the fast break very often. And it's good to have guys who can operate slower, but like it will also help this team to get easy buckets. And I think, you know, where this team has gotten in trouble a lot in the past is they slow it down, they don't have as much time on the shot clock, and that's when they kind of their offense can kind of deteriorate. And Jaylen wants to get rid of that. His push to push the pace has been a consistent theme all season. He brought it up again after the San Antonio game. Like, he just wants to keep playing faster. I do feel like they're playing faster though. They're putting an effort into kind of meeting Jaylen halfway on this one at least.
And I do think he's gotten even like better just in the half court and just terms of making decisions and playmaking in that regard. I feel like all they really need him to do in the playoffs is just like have that little two-man game with Kristaps Porzingis. Because having Jason Tatum in like either the short corner or the opposite corner when those two guys are doing something, how are you going to defend that? Like, if Jason or Jaylen Brown's coming like around off that screen and getting downhill, and you have to basically commit three defenders at that point, and then you have Derek White and Jason Tatum as just the guys in the corner like spacing that, it feels like a pretty impossible offense to stop. And I feel like Kristaps and Jaylen have developed that nice little kind of two-man game. And if Jaylen just continues to make the right read in terms of either attacking the rim or spraying to the corner or getting that pass back to Porzingis, that should be a pretty easy bread and butter play for the Celtics if they are in the half court or in crunch time. And so as long as Jaylen continues to kind of improve and do what he needs to do, I think it's going to be great for them.
You guys didn't answer my question though.
There's no one on the Celtics.
Give me some answers. Give some names. What? Pritchard,
Hauser, Derek White, and Al Horford.
All right.
Basically the second unit.
Yeah, pretty much the second unit. Pretty much him out of the second unit. Like
Jaylen in the second unit. Let's throw O'Shea Brissett in there.
Yeah, O'Shea Brissett. Yeah, that's a good one. O'Shea Brissett at the big instead of Al. Even though Al can get out. Al does like to run when like he's got reason to do it.
And Al is throwing outlet passes lately. Yeah. This is probably the best outlet pass season Al's had, at least with the Celtics. He's really looking to push that thing. Maybe. And he also loves to push it when it goes out of bounds. That might be my favorite Al Horford. Just demanding the ball from the referee so that he can inbound it and head the other way.
All right. So that's settled then. I'm gonna put Brissett in for Hauser. And so like White, Pritchard, Brissett, Al.
That's a mistake.
Is that a mistake? You think Hauser like is a? I guess he does get out quick.
Yeah, he gets out.
Early, I just don't think he's fast though.
Shot clock threes. It doesn't have to be. He doesn't have to be faster to
and
run.
And he's not going all the way to the rim. He just has to get to the 3-point line.
That's true. You gotta go back and forth. Okay. All right. I'm back in.
All right, Jay, you're up with your second pick.
This is the whole year, right? So not just this season.
Yeah, there's no rules.
Jason Tatum extension.
Oh, good one.
I mean, it seems like it'll probably happen because guys don't really turn down the Supermax, but you got to get it done. And this Celtics lineup this Celtics team is going to grow so expensive. Like, once Jalen's extension kicks in next season, once Tatum's extension kicks in the following season, assuming he does sign one, they are going to be like either paying so much money in taxes or forced to make tough decisions regarding the roster around those guys. But it's so important to keep Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown together long-term. We've seen it year after year. They've been super competitive with all types of different rosters around those guys. The one year they weren't very good with those guys was when they were playing Romeo Langford, Jabari Parker, and a bunch of other random guys.
Chevy Ogilvy.
Minutes, yeah. And so basically, like, having Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, especially the way they're developing, especially the way things are heading, especially with the supporting cast around them, you basically guarantee yourself a great basketball team. And I think, you know, Tatum, I suspect he'll sign an extension. I suspect he'll be in Boston for a long time. Everything seems good right now with the trajectory of those guys, the respect they have for Joe Mazzulla, the respect they have for the organization. But getting him to sign on that line is very, very important for this team.
Given how this year has started, or just in general, like, I'm trying to, like you said, no one's ever done, like what type of disastrous scenario would have to unfold where that would, like, where Tatum would hesitate to do that?
He would have to get in a fist fight with Jaylen Brown.
Right, like, pretty much
on the court during a game. Like, that's the only situation I can see, like, a very public feud. And the only situation where I can see Jason Tatum turning down, what, is it going to be $400 million contract?
Pretty close.
But like, 340, I think.
Yeah.
Something like that.
And that speaks to just how well, this season is going, and B, just how well they've handled, like, the situation with Tatum, where it's like, you know, he's spoken publicly plenty in terms of how much he loves Boston. It's very important for the team, but it hasn't been like a big storyline because of the assumption. But that doesn't matter. Like Jay said, it's pivotal for this team's future for now and forever, like for the next decade, for him to be here, and especially this window in the next couple of years, because honestly, for as good as they look together, if Tatum and Brown don't win together the next couple of years, it's honestly, for them to stay together, I think they're going to have to win. As far as just the cost goes and
the finances of it.
The finances of it, exactly.
How does the Derek White extension fit into like their long-term kind of planning?
It's a real good question. Again, he's got 2 years left. So, I mean, 1 year left after this year. So that 2 year window, he's a big part of that too, because that price of that contract is only going up with the way this year's going.
Seems like there's a lot of pressure on the Celtics to win this year, I would say. Like, because with the second, like, I don't know how willing they're going to be, I guess, a second number team. No one really knows.
If you're this good, you should be willing to pay whatever price. And if you're not, you should not own an NBA team. That's it.
I agree with that.
The second they fall off, the second they don't look as good, if they fail in the playoffs again, then, you know, maybe you reconfigure things. But if you're this good, then you try to keep this team together and make it work. And if you win a championship, like, just pay whatever it costs. To me, that's how it should go. I don't know if that's how it will go. Ownership has been committed to paying the luxury tax, but it's one thing to pay the luxury tax, and it's another to pay like the Warriors luxury tax bill, which is sort of where they would be headed if they keep everybody together for the long term. So it'll be interesting, especially with the second apron and all the new, you know, ramifications of having a team over that line and the roster building difficulties that come with that. So there's definitely pressure to win now. But I think kind of every team that's in a similar situation now will be facing similar pressure just because of the realities of the new NBA landscape.
Yeah. The roster dynamic of that, to your point, Jay, like, it's not just the money now. It's like, can you build a functional team with the restrictions that are placed on you. And you might be able to get away with that for a year or two, but that's going to eventually limit your options. And so that's why I think we saw the Celtics, along with a lot of other teams this past offseason, try to push their chips to the middle. And because that urgency is just as high for a number of teams around the league right now as it is for Boston. So it's going to be fun.
And one of the strengths that people don't really talk about a lot with this team is, like, everybody is in their prime. Like Jaylen Brown is as athletic as we've ever seen him, but the brain is also coming together for him. Jason Tatum, same thing. He's been in the league a long time. He's learned so much. He's willing to sacrifice some of his individual stuff in a way that I don't think he would have been earlier in his career. Kristaps Porzingis, like, we probably saw the best season of his career last season in Washington. He's doing the same stuff this year in Boston. Jrue Holiday is older, but he's still super capable physically. Al Horford is the only one who's really past his prime. Derek White, like, clearly just entering his prime. Like, these guys are all at the right age, and that doesn't last forever. And in an NBA thing, things can kind of change quickly. But right now, like, these guys are in their prime. This has really been just a totally dominant team lately.
I kind of still think Horford's in his prime, just like a 15-year prime. Just never
prime
ending.
Never ends.
It's prime.
It is crazy, though, how well he can defend and how well his game has continued to adapt with his age. He's still super helpful to them, even now, which is nuts to me.
B-Rod.
All right, that's my last pick here.
Last pick, taking us home. The final pick in the Potable six-pack.
This is a big one. I'm going with Joe Mazzulla in the postseason. I think Joe Mazzulla has had a really great bounce-back year. He's obviously had a huge challenge last season, and a lot of things didn't go their way for that team in the postseason, and that certainly wasn't all on him, but I think he was a part of the equation on that standpoint. And as he gets more comfortable in year two here, we're seeing, you know, his kind of true colors coming out more and being reflected with the team, which has been great. But I do think in order for this team to win a title and get over the hump, he's going to have to be a big part of that equation in the playoffs. Since we've all seen the question marks this team, the bumps in the road this team has hit in the past, particularly in crunch time spots. And so I'm looking, you know, things like being ahead of the curve on lineup adjustments if needed, looking at crunch time situations and the whole timeout, no timeout thing, like the no timeout philosophy, that's fine. But he should feel more enabled and empowered than ever to say, oh, okay, if you guys aren't doing something, if I'm going to give you no timeout, like, I'm cutting you off and then we're going to run something then. And honestly, the biggest thing now for the crunch time with him and kind of managing this team and pushing the right buttons, I'd want to see this team kind of play through like Derek White more in those spots. I think that's again, based on the situation, based on position, but like going to those matchups in those clutch moments and not being afraid to take the ball out of Tatum or Brown's hands on a certain night, if that's clearly not the right answer for that night. And if the players aren't going to do that themselves, then that's on goes to the coach. And it's not an easy thing to do. It's something that can certainly ruffle feathers. But I think he's built the right relationship with those guys and built the right mentality for this team throughout the year to be able to do it in those big spots. But if he's able to do that, I think that would be, you know, potentially the final piece of the puzzle for this team to get over the hump here. But that's something I'm definitely keeping a close eye on once April, May, and June roll around.
It was interesting to hear Mazzulla talk yesterday about some of the offensive changes that they've had this year. And he basically said, like, last year, obviously, they played a lot of randomness, like a lot of free-flowing offense. And he said he's given the players less freedom this year, and it's just been more structured. And you can see it. Like, they're being super intentional about which matchups they involve, about the two-man game that they use. Sometimes they go with White and Porzingis. Sometimes they go with Tatum and Porzingis. Sometimes they do all sorts of different things, but it's always to get like the right matchup involved and then make the read from there. So I do think he's changed from his first season. I do think the experience of going through the playoffs should help him. Like, there were games that were just mismanaged, I thought, at the end of games sometimes last season, including in the playoffs. When Trae Young got it cooking that one game against Atlanta, like, they didn't do enough to stop him. James Harden got cooking. They didn't do enough to stop him. You've got to be able to throw out different coverages. You've got to be able to just mess up the rhythm of a guy. And I think Joe learned some of that. And I think he decided to diversify the offense partly because of what happened in the playoffs. And he saw, like, sometimes you don't need to just shoot a three or a layup. Like, sometimes it's okay to go in the post and get something. And it can be, like, there's less volatility sometimes, especially in the fourth quarter when you do that. And there's less mood swings on your team. But, like, offensively, just because the percentages of three-pointers can kind of swing one way or another. So I think he's evolved, but I agree. The bigger tests are what happens, you know, when it's a one-point game, 11 seconds left, and you've got to dial up something or not call a timeout and let someone go. Are they going to be organized enough? Have you prepared them to handle that moment well? There's a lot that goes into it, and I do think he's a lot better, but you still got to go up against the Spoelstras. You got to go up against maybe Nick Nurse. You got to go up against, I guess, Adrian Griffin.
Edge Mizzou. You
know? Yeah. We heard, like, at the start of the year a lot about Joe Mizzou, like, throwing curveballs and kind of having something ready for those situations. I think especially on the defensive end, they have done a bit more in just changing up their coverages, especially compared to last season. But I'm curious where you guys think they kind of stand of being able to throw that curveball out there and change something up so they don't, like, let some guy just be able to just take over like a Trae Young or like a James Harden. Jay, like, where do you think their defense is now just in terms of being able to play a bunch of different coverages so they can adapt to certain matchups in the playoffs?
I think part of it is probably just having Porzingis at the rim. Like, that's a huge deal. And to have him at the rim while at the other end having five scorers, like, that starting lineup is just a bear. And then,
but they haven't kept him in drop the whole time. I think they've done a good job of, like, we're not going to play one style of defense so you can just, like, kind of pick us apart. They've really kind of, I think, done better of, like, okay, sometimes we're just going to randomly throw a trap at you and just make you do a bit more thinking on the court. Whereas last year, like, their entire offense was just, or defense was just, like, we're going to switch everything. You're just going to have to deal with it. And I felt like teams could eventually just kind of figure out what they're doing. Whereas this year, they're throwing you different looks where it's, and it's been much harder to kind of score consistently against the Celtics.
Yeah, the spontaneity has been ramped up a ton this year. Particularly, like, I feel like last night was a perfect example of, you know, the Spurs have a 2-for-1 situation, and then they'll just randomly throw a double team in there to kind of mess that up, to slow a team down, and then take that away. And doing that sort of stuff in the playoffs will be huge. And I think, to your point, Packer, the other, like, managing personnel of, like, Porzingis, I do think there's going to be, like, we haven't seen much this regular season, but teams are going to go at him. And they're going to try to play him off the floor because that they know that could be the key to being the Celtics team is being like, all right, let's attack Porzingis. And that way we can get his offense out there. And then we have a better chance of winning this game. And so if you're finding ways to keep him, not hiding him in the pick and roll, like the teams are going to like, but being creative in terms of keeping his impact there with the rim protection, seeing if he can hold his own in certain matchups on the perimeter, like finding ways to do that where you're not exhausting him and you're not exposing him. I think is exactly what you're talking about, Packer, in terms of like what type of stuff he can do. And I think so far, so good on that front as far as this regular season goes.
Are there any lineups? We haven't really seen the Celtics go small with Tatum at the five. And I feel like it's something they should explore. I'm just thinking back to the Warriors game where Kristaps wasn't playing, but like we saw it was just Curry going against Horford, which is not something I, as a Celtics fan, I ever want to see ever again. It just doesn't work. And so is there a lineup out there? Because I feel like they have the personnel where they could put a smaller lineup with Tatum at the five, a team like the Warriors is not going to punish you. It's not something we've really seen them do a lot of. I feel like
it worked much against the Magic.
And you know, so
was Lamar, is that the Lamar Stevens center game? Did he play the Cavs or the Magic in the
when he that was the Magic, game? Yeah.
That was
the
Magic, yeah.
And then Tatum played some center too.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, why would you play Tatum at center?
For that exact scenario where you want to be able to switch everything and not have a weak spot where
but you could switch everything with more size on the court and have like Porzingis has been okay in switches. They don't do it a lot. But
I know, but if we're thinking okay about that exact that, like Trae Young thing, like last year he just would just toasted Al Horford on a lot of switches like that. And so it's like try to take that away by putting a more agile defender on, like having it at every single position. It's I'm
a Packard here. Like you want to have that, you don't want to need to use it, but you don't want to throw that out for the first time for big minutes in game five of the Eastern Conference semifinals in that type of matchup. So like experimenting with that, just like they did it against the Magic game out of the necessity because guys are out. But I agree, like mixing that in here or there just so you know what it looks like in case of emergency. Because, yeah, obviously you don't want to have to play without Porzingis and Al, but there might be a spot where like it makes sense to against Steph Curry or Trae. It probably won't get to that point. I mean, I don't think you're going to see either of those guys in the playoffs this year. Maybe Trae in the first round if the Atlanta gets it together. But I think that's just when you're playing like this, experimenting with that sort of stuff in the regular season, I think that's a good idea just to have in your back pocket.
I concur. anything else from you, Jay? You're in Oklahoma City, you know, like any other notes from your trip that you want to share with the fine listeners out there?
Not really. We talked about my journey away from the Frost Bank Center last night.
Oh, yeah. Tell Packers about this.
Well, no. Well, if it's on the Patreon, then the fine folks will have to subscribe to the Patreon here.
It's on the Patreon.
So you go to patreon.com/stillpotable if you want a little bit of a travel blog from Jay King trying to leave San Antonio.
On New Year's Eve, it was a tough night to get an Uber. Let's just say that.
You're leaving like right at midnight. Yeah, that poorly timed. Oh, man. A tall tale I'm excited to go and listen to on the Patreon, patreon.com/stillpotable. You'll have a full recap of the win over the San Antonio Spurs. You'll have a recap of how the Celtics play the Thunder because Jay King is in Oklahoma City. And you'll have just more content Monday through Friday because that's what we do here on Still Potable. We are the best Celtics podcast. We got all sorts of new gear. We're in the 21st century now. Look at Jay King wirelessly podcasting from his hotel room. That's the type of high quality AV that we're bringing to the airwaves these days. But we are the best Celtics podcast. We're doing it Monday through Friday. And if you would like to listen, you go to patreon.com/stillpotable and join us there. For B-Rob of MassLive.com, for Jay King, we appreciate everyone who's listening here on CLNS, and we hope you subscribe to that YouTube. Please follow us on TikTok, Instagram, at StillPotable. We're putting clips out there, and we're just trying to grow everything. We appreciate everyone listening, and Happy New Year.